The South Dakota Humanities Council receives their email from DOGE, but first it went to the spam folder. From SDPB, today is Thursday, April 10th. This is In the Moment. Coming up this hour, the State Humanities Council trains teachers, coordinates grants, sends scholars to rural communities, and puts on the state's premier book festival. We talk with leadership about what comes next, now their previously approved funding has been intercepted at the source. Olympic champion Billy Mills tours the state as part of the South Dakota Humanities Council's Young Reader Program. We'll listen back to our conversation with Mills as he prepares a return to the state. Plus, a high-stakes art gallery lottery slash reception slash extravaganza. Ipso's lucky number is coming later in the hour. We're broadcasting today from SDPB's Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls. Your host is Lori Walsh. You're in the moment. News is first.
You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. The staff at the South Dakota Humanities Council has learned that their federal funding has been cut by the Department of Government Efficiency, otherwise known as DOGE. The current funding had been appropriated by Congress and is typically distributed through the National Endowment for the Humanities. The South Dakota Humanities Council receives about $950,000 through its congressional appropriation. That makes up about 73% of its operating budget. The rest comes from donations from individuals, corporations, and foundations. Christina Wee is Executive Director of the South Dakota Humanities Council. Stephen Williamson is their board chair. All right, let's start, Christina, with, you know, we've all been following the Trump administration and the efforts of DOGE, and we know that probably there was going to be some conversations about the National Endowment for Humanities at some point, but then the moment arrived and it dropped into your email inbox. Tell me a little bit about that.
You know, it's funny you say inbox, because it actually came to my spam. And so we, you know, since Inauguration Day, we have been planning internally and also on the national level about potential cuts, but there was nothing formal that came out from the Office for NEH, the National Endowment for Humanities. Internally, we were working with our finance committee and the board to really say what if scenarios, you know, if we lost 25%, 50%. Mm-hmm. And we were, you know, it was very difficult, but we were able to get there somewhat. But I don't think anyone, especially on the national level, was anticipating a 100% cut to our federal funding. Like I said, it came in with no warning, came into our spam because it didn't go through the proper channels called the EGMS. And on the national level, it was actually kind of not funny, but for lack of a better word, they were actually coming in an alphabetical order. And so, yeah, we found out, and we've been working hard ever since.
What do you mean they're coming in alphabetical order?
From every state. So it would start from A, and then we have an executive director listserv, and then all of a sudden it would go from A and then down. And then so South Dakota, obviously being an S state, I'm sitting here like sweating, like, when is it going to come?
And you were watching. Okay.
Yep.
And who's the email from?
So it depends. Usually we have from different executive directors across the country because we have a council in every single state and territory. So there's 56 of us. But we also have a national federation that represents all the councils to Congress. They're really our advocacy wing.
Okay. Who'd the email come from saying that there was going to be a cut is what I'm asking.
Oh, yeah. That came from Michael McDonald, the new chair for NEH.
Okay. So. And said... What exactly?
It just said, basically, your grant has been stopped, and it provided the grant number, and that was pretty much it, to be honest. And then, as of actually yesterday, we couldn't even log into the system.
Okay. So you've been essentially dark since?
Correct.
In a very short period of time.
Very, very short. It's been basically from last Tuesday to today. It's been, we haven't heard anything from the national office. We've been really scrambling just on the local level and as councils throughout the country. So trying to piece together our next steps.
Okay. So Steve is board chair. Mm-hmm. There's work to be done, but how do you even know what that work is?
Well, we have a pretty good idea. Okay. We're starting to put that together. This did take us by surprise because the National Endowment for the Humanities was in the CR that was passed in March.
CR.
The Continuing Resolution. Yep. It was voted on by Congress and signed by the President.
Last March.
This March.
This March.
This most recent March.
So President Trump. Not a former president.
Mm-hmm. This current president. So we are expecting to have funding for at least the rest of this year as was prescribed in the continuing resolution. So in our view, this is not a legal action, but we'll go down that some other time. Until then, we will pivot. We will figure out how we go and continue to bring services until this is all figured out through other means. But in the time between now and the next year and this current fiscal year, we will do what we need to do to maintain the mission of the National Endowment for the Humanities. We do have some money in savings, not an exceptional amount by any stretch, but we're going to stay open. We'll be able to stay open for a little bit longer, and then we'll go from there.
All right. So in the meantime, you are reaching out not only to the public, but to elected officials. Tell me a little bit about what your efforts have been to talk to members of Congress who are part of that continuing resolution.
Absolutely. You know, when we first heard notification of this, our first thought was we need to contact our congressional delegation. And so we've actually been working very closely with Dusty Johnson's office as well as Senator Rounds. They both expressed concern and also shock that this happened so quickly. And, you know, they both expressed their support. And they both also informed us that they'll be taking our concerns to the White House.
All right. Let's talk about what the Humanities Council does in South Dakota. You mentioned sort of the national operation and things in every single state. Most of our listeners, I think, know what the Humanities Council does. But in case you don't, or in case you need to be able to talk about it in your community, how do you explain what we do here in South Dakota?
You know, I always like to say the humanities can be just a weird thing to define, right? But I always say it goes back to sharing the stories that define our state, which is part of our mission. And so whether that's history, whether that's celebrating our cultures, whether that's celebrating literature or promoting literacy, it's really just the ability to share our stories as South Dakotans. We have such a rich culture here in our state, and it needs to be celebrated. We have a lot of amazing programs that we do. One of the big ones that we do is our annual Festival of Books, and I know SDPB has been amazing supporters and also attendees at the festival, where we bring in about 5,000 to 7,000 people from not only across the state but on a national level too to come in to hear from their favorite authors, writers, illustrators, and really just celebrate all things books is what I like to say. We also have our Young Readers Book, our Young Readers Program, which provides a free book to every single third grader in the state of South Dakota. That's about 15,000 students across the state. Mm-hmm. So you can imagine, me personally, that is something that is causing me a lot of a worry that that's going to be taken away, because third grade is a pivotal time for young learners, and we are very concerned about that. We also have our grants that we provide throughout the state, which is where we really hit our smallest communities. If we want to talk about reaching the small towns in South Dakota, it's through those grant programs. And I'm talking, we have funded small VFWs in small towns for what's called a Call to Freedom, or our veterans writing programs, as you mentioned earlier. We're a proud funding sponsor of the Spelling Bee this year. And so, but not only that, we also get really in depth on South Dakota history as well.
Yeah. What do you want to add to that? A program that is impactful to you? I mean, she mentioned veterans writing programs, and that was one of the – I've been part of the book festival as a journalist since before I even came to SDPB, covering that and doing those interviews and being out there to tell the stories. But also as a humanities scholar and as a one-book scholar, I did a lot of work with the Veterans Writing Project in libraries with veterans, helping them tell their stories. Before I, you know, had a full-time job here at SDPB, I was doing that work. What are some of the other programs, Stephen, that come to your mind that might go under people's radar?
You know, the biggest thing that really is the reason why I'm involved with our Humanities Council is the work that we're doing with children and our youth. Mm-hmm. We know that all the numbers since about 2013, literacy, this is national, math, not only here in South Dakota, but we also know suicide rates are up with our teens, and we also know self-harm is involved with our teens. And what Christina and I have talked about since she came on board is a real commitment to what we're going to do with our youth and how we are going to mobilize not only with what we do, but also partners to go and start talking about what's going on with our youth and what can we do in regards to reintroducing books and reading and the joy of reading to our young folks all over the state of South Dakota, no matter where they're at, what county, rural, urban, if they're on a reservation or not. That is one of the goals that we have set out in moving forward to build upon everything that we've already done in the past.
Yeah. The South Dakota One book and the South Dakota Young Readers One book. So this you mentioned third graders all reading the same book. What is the title this year?
It's Billy Mills, Wings of an Eagle.
Okay. So this year, every third grader gets Billy Mills, Wings of an Eagle. Nice choice.
We love it.
And then he'll go on tour?
Yes.
And he'll go on a book tour and be at the festival then?
Yep.
Okay. And Rebecca Claren?
Yep.
And I'm forgetting Cost of Free Land, which is about Jewish settlers and Lakota land.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about the South Dakota One Book for adults.
I absolutely love the One Book. Yeah. This year's book was an amazing selection, especially just being a history nerd myself. It really was, she had an amazing ability to tie in her family's story as immigrants from Russia, as also Jewish people coming to South Dakota, but tying that story into the land in Western South Dakota was absolutely beautiful. I love the fact that I can meet with folks and talk about this amazing book and have really good discussions on not only, quote, the land in South Dakota, but also just our stories of coming to the state have really defined us. And I don't know if you've read the book yet, but it completely, she'd be talking about this treaty that was broken, 150 years ago, and then she would zoom out and say, and now I'm on a bus with my family traveling to this very spot. And it was just amazing story. And I just love talking to folks about it because it is a very South Dakota story.
So I'm getting through one other book by an author who's going to be on the show, and then I will read this book because I'll interview her in our Black Hills studio the first Sunday in May. I think we're her first stop on the tour. And last year, the author was the first stop on our tour, on the author tour here in the Sioux Falls studio. The power of all of South Dakotans being invited to read the same book at the same time. We've built quite a knowledge over the years based on the books that we've all read together.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the beautiful things about having this book is it really, just like you said, one book for all of South Dakota, is it really does tie in folks to at least this book here, why we are here, how we got here. And it challenges folks to also think of their story. You know, I'm not from South Dakota. I came here 20 years ago. Yeah. But my children love to hear, okay, how did you come from Minnesota and why? I mean, we all know a lot of folks here were in the same boat as me, right? I was going to stay for 3 years and move back home. Well, that's not happening anymore. But it's just so fun to sit back and just to be able to talk about concepts that we've all experienced.
Yeah. I'm going to put you on the spot, Steve. You have a favorite South Dakota One book? What jumps to mind?
Oh, boy.
I know. There's many. I can't think of one for myself.
I'll be honest with you. The Nick Estes book.
Oh, sure.
Really blew me away.
Our history is our future.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. When growing up in Pierre and then reading that book, it was another side to a history that I was not aware of here in South Dakota. And I think the important question is that as South Dakotans, who are the people that defend and take on and always are discussing what is the history of South Dakota and why is this important? And that's what we've presented to our national representation is that we are here, we have a very unique mission here in South Dakota to go and do that, to go and make this presentation of what is South Dakota and what is the conversation that we do want to have about our history, not only the past, but our present and our future. Mm-hmm. And that is the value of the humanities in South Dakota.
All right. Back to the Young Readers Program, since 2014, 86,715 books you've distributed. That's impactful.
It's a feat I never thought that any organization quite frankly, could handle that many books. And when I think of not only, yes, it's amazing that we get books in the hands of third graders, we actually distribute all of those by hand through our amazing volunteers. You know, shipping is expensive. And so last year we had our amazing board members, Steve was one of them, literally drive to the smallest communities across the state and deliver those books.
Yeah. What do you want to say about the Teachers Institute?
Teachers Institute is an amazing program we have at the Humanities in that we actually work through this year. It'll be through South Dakota State University where we offer continuing education credits to teachers to take classes on Native American culture and history. And then they take that back to their classrooms because South Dakota is it's so vital for our state to know about our Native American history, Native American culture, and the fact that we have teachers that are wanting to come together and learn about this and then to spread that message. It's phenomenal. And, you know, that is one of the programs that is going to be affected by these national cuts.
I'm going to go back to the money.
Oh, yeah.
73% of the Humanities Council in South Dakota revenue comes from NEH. Steve, you talked about, you know, keeping programs going for now because you've had some savings. First of all, why keep it going at all? Why not pause, cancel everything, say, hey, this has been taken away from you. Call your lawmaker and have them get it back. Why try to keep the lights on for a little bit longer?
You know, there's value to just staying in the game sometimes and being there and seeing what comes next. We believe that eventually this will be, we'll see a return of some funding from the national. We don't think that this is going to completely go away. We believe that eventually it'll be worked out in some manner, whether it's behind closed doors or judiciously.
Because you mentioned it, you thought it was not a legal action because Congress has appropriated this money already.
And it was already signed. Mm-hmm. So this money is in the budget for this year. It is supposed to be there for us to go and provide, you know, invest and reinvest back in the state of South Dakota. So moving forward, though, we will go and we will continue to do what we do with the resources that we have, and we will pivot and we will find new resources if necessary. We will figure this out. We're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
It might be a different mission. It might be we might have to make some changes. We understand that. And Christine is the right person to do it as executive director. But we're not going anywhere. We've already made that decision. We'll figure this out in some manner.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about what you want people to do right now.
As of right now, just we've had so many amazing supporters do so already, but please continue to call your elected officials. And yes, our congressional delegation, please keep calling them. But also, this is hitting every corner of South Dakota. So your South Dakota legislators should be knowing about this. This is affecting their communities as well. We actually had a meeting last week with one of our legislators to share how this is going to impact our state as a whole. And so keep calling, keep supporting the humanities. You can donate at SDHumanities.org. And we actually have a mailer out right now, so make sure to watch your mailboxes. But also, just continue to share the story of the humanities, because right now it is so vital in this political culture that we have to come together as South Dakotans, know why we're here, and use those stories to get where we want to go.
Any final thoughts you want to leave people with here today?
You know, I think it's just really important that people realize that, you know, as a South Dakotans, we do have the same history. We might have some disagreements on all the things, all the variables that are in that history, but we all have the same history. And it's important that we talk about that history. And it's important that to go and uplift our folks in rural South Dakota and their story. Just because they have a low population does not mean their story is not important. It is important. And we're the group of people that like to go and recognize that so we can all go and have that discussion about what is the micro version of South Dakota history and how that grows into the larger version of what makes this state so great.
That's Christina Wee, Executive Director of the South Dakota Humanities Council, alongside Stephen Williamson, Board Chair. Now, after the break, we will revisit a conversation with Olympic gold medalist Billy Mills. Learn why he is in a club of one and why he is returning to South Dakota. You're in the moment on listener-supported SDPB. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. Olympic gold medalist Billy Mills returns to Sioux Falls this month. He's part of the Beyond the Books Literary Festival from April 25th to 26th. Mills was in our studio last year. He spoke to a live audience in SDPB's Leo P. Flynn Gallery in September. He talked about his children's book, Wings of an Eagle, which tells Mills' life story of Olympic trials and dreams. Author Donna Janelle Bowman and illustrator S.D. Nelson joined the conversation. Take a listen. Mr. Mills, as I got ready to welcome you to the show, of course I went back and watched footage of the race again and again. I could not get enough of it and of the sports commentators who are losing. One got fired because he was so excited that he just screamed into the microphone, "Look at Mills, look at Mills." And he lost decorum and his job because of that. But how could we not just completely come undone with that? When you travel all these places, do you just see joy reflected on people's faces from reliving that moment in our hearts again and again?
I've been blessed. I see their soul because they're so sincere in expressing their appreciation and how they shared their moment with me. And to me, it's a very sacred moment.
Yeah. Do you relive that moment again and again?
I relive that moment twofold in a very special way. I don't see Billy winning the Olympic 10,000 meter run, but I may be in a classroom, college students or third graders, and I can see and sense their dream, or they may be sharing their dream with me. And I share mine to empower theirs. And it's simply a traditional way in the Lakota culture to give back. And jokingly, because of sports writers, on occasion, I have a nice laugh, maybe a few tears, when they say, "Billy, you're still in that exclusive club of one," meaning the only person from the Western Hemisphere to ever win that race. But I'm ready. I'm ready to have another American join me. I hope it's a female 10,000-meter runner, then another male runner. But sport has been a blessing.
Children. This is a children's book. This is a book for children. Many, many adults will feel nourished by this book and this story. But your childhood, though a loving childhood with your father, he plants this seed in your heart. It's a difficult childhood. And that's part of what makes the story so compelling, is that we know what you went through. We know part of what you went through. Grief, the racism you faced. When you were a little kid, tell us about your dad and the idea of having your wings clipped by grief.
And I remember with my dad, he never shared the moments he did with me, with my siblings. He would come and get me out of school to take me fishing. And I found out later he had a bad heart, and he needed somebody with him to run for help. And he believed in me, this little boy. He chose me. And the most powerful moments were fishing. And my mother had passed away. He hugged me and said, "Son, your heart's broken." He drew a circle. "Step inside of the circle, son." And he said, "You have to look beyond the hurt, the hate, the self-pity. All of those emotions will destroy you. Look deeper, way down deeper where the dreams lie. Find the dream. It's the pursuit of a dream that heals broken souls." Now, he said that to me earlier in a different way when we're ready to bury my mother. And he said to take the culture, traditions, spirituality, extract from the the virtues and values from them and put those virtues and values into your daily life for confidence, for direction, for clarity of mind, to make positive decisions and stay the course. Later on in my life, the Lakota virtues and values became the vision and mission statement of my training to win a gold medal at the Olympic Games.
Tell me a little bit about the Marine Corps, and you know why I'm asking this question.
Yes.
Talk about the intersection between the Marine Corps and elite running, just getting to the Olympics.
The fact that we're both Marines, you'll enjoy this. The Marine Corps person in charge of special services, they picked their all-Marine Corps team to go to Camp Pendleton to train for the Olympic Games. I was not chosen. Yet the coach they chose, Tommy Thompson Sr., world record holder, Canadian, high hurdler, gold medalist, coached for 30 years at the Naval Academy, 28 of those years totally deaf. He believed in me, and he was wanting me to be chosen. I was told no. So I go around the captain, and I'm a second lieutenant, and told him I'm going to the colonel. I'm going directly to the colonel. I asked the colonel if he could send me to Camp Pendleton to train for the Olympic Games. And he simply said, how do you think you can do? And I told him, I can win. I can win. But I need the Marine Corps to believe in me. Yeah. He said, in 30 days, you'll be at Camp Pendleton. So within 30 days, my wife and one daughter check into base housing at Camp Pendleton, and I meet Tommy Thompson, the coach. He said, I'm so glad you're here. Now, what are your plans? I said, I want to make the Olympic team. He said, I know that. That's why I wanted you out here. What do you want to do at the Olympic Games? So it was the first person, and this, I hope you understand this, it was the first white man I ever trusted. I said, don't tell anybody, but I want to win the gold medal. He said, now we're talking. From this moment on, we just focus, visualize, train for the gold medal.
Thank you for that story. We are talking about the book Wings of an Eagle. And Billy Mills, the title comes from the race itself. We talked about your childhood and the grief after losing your mother, your father's message to you. And now it's race day, and the eagle comes back in this really powerful way during the race. Will you tell us that story?
The power of the eagle, of course, is my dad told me, if I do these things, son, if you do these things, someday you can have wings of an eagle. And the story has many directions into which it can go, but I'll say it in this manner. The race is underway. My wife is sitting in the stands. The last lap, I'm in third place, diagnosed borderline diabetic, going low blood sugar. I'm pushed into the third lane. I didn't know if I could go with them, but I prepared my mind so strong. It was, if I don't go with them, I cannot heal a broken soul. I was trying to heal a broken soul. My dream was to use the Olympic experience as a way of healing a broken soul. And Clark takes off. Gamuti goes after him. They're 12 yards ahead of me, 100 meters to go. They're 8 to 10 yards ahead of me. And I glance and I see a German runner, and there was an eagle in his jersey. And it was so powerful. My dad speaking to me, I'm this little boy, wings of an eagle. I can win, I can win. Then I'm gonna win, but I may not get to the finish line first, but I'm gonna try to get to the finish line first. The tape breaks across my chest. An official came up to me and simply said, who are you, who are you? And I said, oh my God, did I miscount the laps? Do I have one more lap to go? He said, finished, new Olympic champion. Is there anything we can do for you? I said, I want to tell the German with the eagle on his jersey that that helped me. I found the German, there was no eagle. It was simply a perception. And perceptions can create us or destroy us. Then they said, is there anything else we can do for you? I said, I want my wife. Within moments, they're tapping her on the shoulder. Mrs. Mills, the new Olympic champion, requests his wife. We hug, I start crying, and I said, I know what it meant. She said, what? What do you mean? I said, 90 meters, 80 meters, right by where you were sitting. I saw the eagle on this man's jersey, and I'm going to win, but I may not get to the finish line first. It simply meant, Pat, I healed a broken soul, and in the process, became an Olympic gold medal. Now, healing the broken soul, when you go low blood sugar, there's also a very low form of depression that overcomes you. And I would get suicidal thoughts. And I healed a broken soul, became an Olympic gold medalist, and still that elite member of the Club of One.
Billy, we have people from all over listening to the radio broadcast. You grew up listening to radio. So for those kids in Pine Ridge who are listening now with their parents and are tuned in to Billy Mills, what would you want to say to them?
I think I'd like to say to all the youth in America, we have in our culture the seventh generation, and that's the generation from the time we signed our treaties with the United States government that can take culture, tradition, spirituality into the horizon of the future and choreograph America's future. But it's just not the seventh generation of the indigenous youth. I'm half white, half Lakota, so it's those seventh generations of my great-grandfather, B.B. Mills, from England, and others that were alive at that time. So I want the Lakota young people to know that their voice needs to be heard. And the best way to prepare for their voice to be heard is take the virtues and the values, extract out from the culture, traditions, and spirituality, put those virtues and values into today's life. They're traditional, they're today. A way of explaining them is my Olympic world. I belong to a world of sport that began 2,800 years ago. And I try to follow Olympic virtues and values. So you take those, get to know the diversity of the student next to you. They get to know your diversity. I took from sport global unity through the dignity, character, beauty of global diversity, which is not only the theme of the Olympic Games, but the future of humankind if we choose. So I would say to Lakota, prepare yourself for your voice to be heard on a national and global basis, and get to know the diversity of the student next to you. He or she learns about your diversity, and think how powerful we would be. Our comparison would be, women hold up half the world, and look how powerful it would be if we empowered all of our young girls. Countries my wife and I have traveled to, they've read the Lakota Treaty. They've read our treaty. And they look to the Lakota women, than all women in the United States of America, for confidence, for direction, for hope, for clarity of mind, to make a difference in the world. And they're saying what the tribal governments, state governments, federal governments do to empower women, as well as diversity in America, is either their celebration or their demise. So it's time for our voice to be heard, and it's time for us to truly make our efforts to understand the diversity of this incredible democratic experiment.
Did you see that spirit in the Olympics at Paris this summer? You were there. What
yes.
did you take away from that?
I gave Wings of an Eagle to Sir Sebastian Coe, who was a gold medalist, and he was knighted as a knight in England, and he's president of the World Track and Field Association. I gave him the book because there are 400 plus million people, indigenous people worldwide, that a world of approaching 8 million. and with the hopes that the countries that are participating in the Olympic Games, they can all understand and they have an opportunity to be exposed to wings of an eagle, and they then find their own wings of an eagle, and we promote diversity among humanity. So the games there were very, very special. But I also want to make a comment about Donna, because I put my soul into her efforts, just like you. I read, and it was, oh my God, this incredible lady. She knows more about me than I do. She feels my heartbeat. And I associated that with my great-grandfather, who Red Cloud asked to be the first Indian agent. But the government said no, because he spoke fluent Lakota, has Lakota children, and it would be too hard to take the Indianness out of them. And Donna, I read that, and she's offering opportunities nationally, globally, to people learn about the diversity of young indigenous people. So we can take our total being and contribute to this incredible democratic experiment that other countries are telling my wife and Pat as we travel, why is America trying to let the passage of time and the winds of change wash the footprints of diversity away when that's what your democratic experiment is based upon? One nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. So I see this as a global effort, and Donna, SD, brought magic to paper and the emotions. I cried when I read Wings of an Eagle. The illustrations, the pictures captured me. The words captured me. Words I would try to express and try that, words I'd love to share with people. And now they can do it through the magic you both brought to the book Wings of an Eagle.
That's our September 2024 conversation with Olympic gold medalist Billy Mills. The author and the illustrator of the children's book Wings of an Eagle also joined this live in-studio interview. That's Donna Janelle Bowman and S.D. Nelson. Billy Mills returns to Sioux Falls as part of the Beyond the Book Literary Festival. That's coming on April 25th and 26th. Learn more about Beyond the Books online. We'll have links on our website, sdpb.org/news. Up next, we will preview an arts fundraiser. The Ipso Gallery in Sioux Falls holds its high-stakes game with the works of 20 local artists as prizes. We'll have that conversation after the break. You're on listener-supported SDPB. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. Ipso Gallery's lucky number is hurtling down the bingo chute once again on Friday, April 11th. It's a fundraiser show, and it has sponsors competing in three rounds of high-stakes, lottery-style drawings. Winners take home their favorite works from 20 local artists. Gallery director Liz Heron stopped by SDPB's Kirby Family Studio.
Ipso is a gallery inside an advertising agency called Fresh Produce.
Yeah.
It was carved out of the footprint and dedicated as a space where we can feature artists and creative projects that we dream up. And it's been an incredible, wonderful journey for all of us to grow that culture, to grow the scope of what we're featuring and dreaming up for that space.
Yeah. And how's that been going? What's the feedback been? Because it just seems essential now to downtown Sioux Falls.
Well, thanks for saying that. We love it. Sometimes we are so in love with the space and the strange things that we're doing. We always kind of wonder, are we going to continue to connect with people? Or are they still going to be into this? You know, we keep going a little bit further out. But people still enjoy coming. And so I think we've created enough of a culture within the community of Ipso that people are wondering kind of what we're going to do next, and they continue to show up. So that's great.
And that is a gift and also a little bit of a challenge.
Well, the challenge...
You better do something next.
Yeah,
I haven't seen you. What have you shown me lately?
Well, we are... I always feel like, you know, in some ways, even as an artist, you wonder, is this going to stop? Like, right. Am I going to run out of ideas?
Yeah.
But I think when you're working with... It's not just me coming up with these art show concepts. It's Ted and Mike and their whole crew and everybody's right. collaborating. So you're working with 20 brains and 20 creative people with really wacky ideas. And there's just, it's almost like a bottomless basket of ideas. Mm. I don't know. We just keep coming up with more. So it's been great. And I think there's never been a point where we've feel even remotely exhausted by yeah. exhausting our ideas, that is.
I feel like that's key for artists who want to be artists, because there's a tendency to save your precious idea and not spend it because there might not be another one behind it. But what I'm hearing you say is, you know, keep it going. Keep the faucet on, as it were.
Yeah, it's funny how, and, you know, I am married to a very creative person yeah. who I think has to manufacture new interesting concepts at a rate that no artist I even know can do it. And I'm fascinated and really, I really admire how he does that. So if he can do that, then we can do 5 shows a year that are really interesting.
Agency,
yeah. Yes.
All right. Tell us a little bit about Lucky Number. What's the concept here?
Well, Lucky Number comes around every 2 years, and it is a show where we raise money for an arts project, an arts organization, and in this case, an original work of art. And we're piggybacking on Lucky Number from 2 years ago, trying to reach this magical number of about $50,000 raised for a public artwork commissioned to be designed and specifically placed in the Jacobson Plaza area or the Falls renovation area. We don't know yet exactly where it's going to go. We're working with the city on that right now. But if art is going to go in that space, you know, public art is usually either donated or efforts like the Arc of Dreams, where a lot of people yeah. pool their funds.
Crowdsourced
and
in some way.
Yes,
yeah.
yeah. And so IPSO, you know, just because we're a part of this community, we're so close to Jacobson Plaza, this is our neighborhood, we decided to raise money for a public art piece that's going to go into that space.
Do we know what the art piece is?
No, not
no.
yet.
Okay.
We don't. but IPSO will be yeah. working very closely with the artist to create what's essentially an experience-based art project. And although we don't know exactly where or what phase of Jacobson Plaza it will go into, or if it might even end up on the other side of the falls as the falls are being kind of redesigned, it's going to be site-specific, and okay. it's going to envelop the viewer. So it's not really going to be work of art on a pedestal. It's going to be an experience in and of itself. So I think that will be a really unique feature. Instead of thinking about a pre-existing work mm-hmm. that we put on, you know, a granite pedestal for people to admire, it's going to be designed specifically to activate the space and activate the person's imagination within the space. Usually in those cases, like kind of recontouring the area, making it an environment from which your viewpoint is altered or kind of zeroed in or focused in on something, really causing the viewer to experience the place differently or mm-hmm. in a new and kind of enlightening way. But anyway, that's our goal, is to, yeah. after these two fundraisers, make this work of art possible. And we're going to be getting proposals in for that. It's going to be a long process, but
right, yeah.
it's our goal to contribute to
the
downtown.
But the length of the process is part of its strength.
Yes, I think so. And we're doing everything.
It's like a community mural where everybody gets together and talks about it, and then 2 years later you're painting.
Yes.
The community that builds during the talking is,
yes.
is essential. So
yes.
as this process goes forward, that's the point.
And we're trying to follow the new kind of public art procedures that are sure. being put into place by the city mm-hmm. and using best processes to kind of flesh out ideas, artists, et cetera. So,
all right. So what happens Friday night in Sioux Falls?
Well, that's the fun part.
Yeah.
It's lucky number. And so sponsors buy in at $1,500 to participate in this. With that money, they will go home that night with three works of art valued at $1,500 or more, which is such a return on an investment that you're doing, you know, for an art project like this. The sponsorship is actually split 50-50 between the project itself and the artist. We are very keen on paying the artist for what they're doing. And with Ipso chipping in a couple $100 more, the artist basically makes a 60%, which is what they would make in a gallery setting, okay, for their contributions of work for the show. They submit two pieces worth roughly $375, so two smaller pieces, and one worth $750. 20 artists times three rounds, that's 60 works of art total, okay, but three rounds where in those rounds, each sponsor is given a lucky number and randomly, almost like bingo ball machine,
sure,
numbers are withdrawn and then Mike Hart calls it out and then someone screams in delight and they pick whichever work of art they want off of that wall for that round.
Oh, they get to pick.
Yeah, okay. And it's all hung salon style. So right now the gallery's about as full as you can possibly get it, full of art. And the person who's lucky enough to get their number called, I mean, early on will have the greatest number of selections. So, and then we get all the way down to the 20th number and you get the last work of art there. But the great news is that we have curated it to be 20 of what we consider to be some of the very best artists in the state, yeah, whose work is collectible, valuable, oftentimes way more valuable than the price range that we're even putting it at, because
right,
artists are very generous with us. So people come home with a collection. Some people's art, home collections of art, have come specifically from Lucky Number. Yeah.
Who are some of the artists?
Oh, wow.
Some we big have names so many on this.
Yes, we have, well, Cisa Cooper, yeah, Cody Henricks. We have
Someday
Eli
we'll have
Show.
A Cisa Cooper piece in my very humble art collection.
Well, I'll
That's
tell
like
you
a
what,
dream. Yeah.
You can come in with partners on a sponsorship. So let's say you didn't want to do the full 1500, you could grab two friends from SDPB and say, I want to do 375, you do a 375, yeah, and you do the 750, and then you can end up with a Cisa Cooper. <That's right.
laughs> Any of these artists, we've
Erin Murtha,
oh, I love
and
her.
I do too, yeah, and Diana Beale, Andrew Costins.
Nice.
I mean, we have Mary Groth, Jim
Liz
Groth.
Liz Heron.
Liz yeah. Heron's in there. Yeah.
Yeah. Mary Groth, Jim Groth. Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah. Oof. We have kind of a real range of artists. So many of them are just the ones that we admire the most.
Did they
in
have
state.
A theme that they were creating? Anything?
No.
It was artist choice. It
yep.
wasn't like, you
yes.
know, give a, there was no prompt, as it were.
No, there's okay. no prompt. You're just getting a genuine piece that yeah. comes out of their mm-hmm. repertoire of ideas.
What's ahead at the gallery after Lucky Number?
We have a show coming up called Who's Judith Shornman, which leaves a huge question mark out there, but it's an artist that no one has heard of in this area, and we're going to feature Judith's work. There's a bit of mystery surrounding this show, and really that's almost all I can say about it at the moment.
I love it. Liz Heron, thank you so much for coming by. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
You can watch the Lucky Number play out at the Ipso Gallery in Sioux Falls Friday, April 11th. The gallery is open for viewing at 5:30 p.m. with the lottery following at 6:30. The event is free and open to the public. That's our show for today. We hope that it served you. In the Moment is produced by Ellen Kester and Ari Youngeman. I'm Lori Walsh from all of us at SDPB. Thanks for listening.